Broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order today, March 8, 2021. We will start by having a works by opening a work session on. Oh, excuse me. No, we'll start by calling. I know. I caught myself before you caught me, Senator Boquist, for the record. Please call the roll.
Senator Findley.
He's excused.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Present on audio.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Present by video. Thank you. Old habits die hard. We never have to, when we're meeting live, we never have to call the roll. So it's having been a chair for as many years as I have, it's hard to break that habit. So my apologies. So now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 141.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 141, with the adopted dash one amendment, addresses the calculation of partial property tax exemption in vertical housing. It eliminates the possibility of rounding in the calculation and adjusts the partially exempt value schedule. It's expected to have a minimal fiscal impact, and just in terms of calculating the revenue impact, communication with the cities and counties, essentially the cities and program managers work on the calculations, and the revenue impact is uncertain, but the current program property tax expenditure is, according to the most recent tax expenditure report for the biennium, is $4 million. So the expected revenue impact of a change in rounding based on the way the calculation is made would be sort of an estimate of an upper bound of about $1 million.
Thank you. Senator Boquist, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move SB 141.
We need a dash one amendment.
I think we put the dash one amendment in previously.
Did we already put that in? Okay, then we don't need to put it in again. So please proceed, Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I think I knew what I was doing. Madam Chair, I move SB 141 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Boquist has moved Senate Bill 141 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and with a referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Madam Chair.
Chris.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't think it has a subsequent to Ways and Means.
That's what I thought. But, you know, since Senator Boquist is never wrong, I just questioned myself on that.
I'm reading the script.
I don't have the script. So let's see. But you said that this has a local property tax impact, but it has no revenue impact. Is that right, Jamie?
Madam Chair, we have issued a revenue impact statement. It's just that we don't have a point estimate for dollars. We have an upper bound of an estimate depending on how the rounding affects the different cities. So we do have a revenue impact.
But there's no fiscal impact, right?
Correct them.
No, it says minimal, that's it. So it does not ask for a referral like was discussed before.
Yeah, let's just, would you be able to amend your
motion? Madam, I withdraw my motion. Madam Chair, I move SB 141 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Boquist has moved Senate Bill 141 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you please call, or is there discussion? Okay, would you please call the roll?
Senator Findley?
Senator Findley votes yes by audio.
Senator Findley is present by audio. Thank you.
Senator Riley?
Votes aye.
Senator Wagner?
Wagner votes aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Senator Boquist votes aye.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Burdick votes aye. Measure is passed. And Senator Boquist, since you were so heavily involved in this, would you like to carry it?
Yeah, right, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay, now I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 108.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 108 makes changes to the program for a property tax special assessment of historic property. It updates the terminology, including commercial property, date of application, and the term preservation. And it details the requirements of historic property special assessment, including application fees and designation of as historic property. It provides conditions for and treatment of disqualification from special assessment program for historic property, and also extends the sunset to July 1st, 2031. And in essence, there's also just a lot of cleanup language in the bill. And I think we have the parks here to testify.
Yes, we do. We have Christine Curran signed up.
That's accurate.
Okay, are you done with your summary?
That's the high level summary of the bill, and I'm happy to answer questions if the committee would like.
Thank you. Christine Curran.
Nope.
Do we have Christine Curran here off of mute?
Nope, not here.
Not here. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108, and we'll take it up after the next bill. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 482.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. This is Caitlin Harger from the Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 482 deals with what is referred to as carried interest. And this bill requires taxpayers to add to their federal taxable income on their Oregon return 19.6% of the investment services partnership income, that's commonly referred to as carried interest, that's being treated as a net capital gain on their return. This applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2022, and it takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die. I've also prepared and put on OLIS a one-pager that discusses carried interest in general. There's a diagram that describes how it is structured within an investment, as well as how it relates to labor income. And I'm happy to go through any additional details that the committee or the chair might request.
Okay, thank you. I'm not seeing Senator Taylor, but I may not be looking.
I'm right here.
Excellent. Welcome, Senator Taylor.
Okay. Should I proceed, Madam Chair?
Please do.
Okay, Madam Chair, may I ask, make a special request?
After you identify yourself, yes.
Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, representing Senate District 21, Inner Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove.
Yes, what is your request?
Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist, I'm bringing before you Senate Bill 482. That bill, if you were interested in it, would require ultimately a simple majority for it to pass from the Oregon Senate. There is another bill that one would somewhat call it a companion bill, which is Senate Bill 479. However, that requires a three-fifths majority to pass. Obviously, I understand why it is that the Senate would not be hearing that, since we all know that that type of bill requiring a three-fifths vote would need to start in the House. However, it would make more sense if I could talk about both of them. So that is my request, please, because it is a little bit out of context to talk about one. It'll make more sense once I get going. So if I could please talk about both Senate Bill 482 and Senate Bill 479. 479 had been on the agenda for today, and then it was removed, I assume, because of the three-fifths vote.
Okay, so we'll keep our public hearing open on 482 and open an informational hearing on Senate Bill 479.
Okay. So go ahead. I'm sorry, Mr. Alanek, I feel like he was...
It wasn't on the agenda.
Yeah, you can't.
That's right. It wasn't. It was taken up.
I apologize. I refer to it in my testimony.
We can suspend. We can suspend the rules, I think, to allow. Can we, Chris, to allow reference to Senate Bill 479?
Potential. Do you want to stand at ease for a moment, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Just to clarify, though, I'm not asking to testify on Senate Bill 479. I'm just communicating to you, Madam Chair, and to Vice Chair Boquist, that I will be referencing the other bill. I'm not testifying on the bill. I'm just want to.
Chair, I don't have a problem with that.
That's fine.
Okay, let's proceed. Thank you.
Okay, just to clarify, sorry, I didn't need to ask that question, but I didn't want you, Madam Chair, and Senator Boquist to wonder why in the world is she talking about this other bill. So that was what I asked the special permission for, because we're not all together in the building. So I wanted to clarify that. Okay, thank you. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee, again, Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21. I'm here today to talk about Senate Bill 482, but I will also be referencing Senate Bill 479. These are two versions of a similar concept that address what is commonly referred to as the carried interest loophole, a loophole that exists in federal tax code. These bills address this loophole and creates fairness between taxpayers through an increased state-level tax. General partners at private equity or hedge funds typically receive two types of compensation. First, a management fee that is taxed as ordinary income, and second, they receive a percentage of profits of the assets they manage called carried interest. Current law allows this carried interest compensation to be taxed at a substantially lower capital gains rate of 20% instead of the individual income tax rate of 37% that would normally apply for these high income earners. Last year, a publication of the taxation of carried interest from the Congressional Research Service, which we all know is basically Congress's version of their think tank, noted that the current treatment of carried interest in the tax code violates basic principles of equity. Individuals with the same income should pay the same in taxes, in my opinion, and high income earners should not be taxed at a lower rate than lower income earners. Allowing this group of people to tax their earned income at such a lower rate is simply unfair, again, in my opinion. So Senate Bill 479 will recoup that federal tax treatment as revenue for Oregon by adding a 19.6 tax on carried interest capital gains at the state level. By combining the state and federal tax levels, private equity and hedge fund investment managers will in total pay approximately 39% of this income, much closer to the federal tax rate on other income. In 2019, I asked the Legislative Revenue Office to conduct an analysis on the impact of this change. Obviously, you heard some of that today and want to thank Caitlin for that. And I want to thank Mr. Alanek. I've been working with him for several years. This is a little bit complicated, but in many ways, it really isn't that complicated. Preliminary estimates indicated that
this is Chrissy.
Could bring in approximately $17.8 million in the first biennium and $25.9 million in the second biennium. Because Senate Bill 479 requires a three-fifths majority vote, I asked Legislative Council and LRO about the options for addressing this loophole, and the result is Senate Bill 482. So that's why I needed to talk about both of them. Senate Bill 482 is a concept that pursues an alternative approach to recover some of the lost revenue from the carried interest loophole. This bill requires a person to add to their amount of taxable income, again, the 19.6 of federal tax savings they have received due to their investment services partnership income being treated as net capital gain. Since this is considered an addition, it does not require a three-fifths majority, according to the analysis from LC and LRO. Again, I will state that sentence again. Senate Bill 482. This bill requires a person to add to their amount of taxable income the 19.6 of the federal tax savings they have received due to their investment services partnership income being treated as net capital gain. Since this is considered an addition, it does not require a three-fifths majority, according to the analysis from LC and LRO. It also brings in substantially less revenue, however, closer to $2 million in the first biennium based on the 2019 estimates. And so, of course, I will defer to Mr. Alanak and to Caitlin if there are any technical questions that I cannot answer. And I appreciate you allowing me to discuss both bills, Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. This is actually a question for Chris or Kyle. We're connected to the carried interest deduction, right? So if the federal government got rid of that, we would be connected. Is that right, Chris?
Madam Chair, this is a treatment for a certain kind of income, and it's a certain kind of income that the feds treat as capital gains. Mm-hmm. So we are tied to that income, but we don't follow that treatment. Our capital gains and our regular income are all treated the same.
Okay, got it. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. Thank you, Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And now we have Scott Bruin.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think it's a slow process to get the screen up. There we go. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee. My name is Scott Bruin. I am the Tax and Fiscal Policy Director for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is the largest business trade association in the state. We have about 1,600 members, employ about 330,000 Oregonians. We are in opposition to House Bill 482. With the reason as I'm sure you'll discuss more, it does affect a really small section of the Oregon taxpayers, Oregon ratepayers, but we believe it's not the right time to do that. And the reason we believe it's not the right time to increase tax rates on these tax filers is harkens back to some of the testimony that I've given this committee in the past. I'll be very brief. It's simply to say that all Oregon businesses have experienced a significant tax increase from 2019 to 2022 when tax measures passed by the legislature are fully implemented. So notwithstanding the kind of the small subset size of this, these are still businesses, most of them, that have had to deal with increased taxes. And so we don't believe that right now is the right time to further increase taxes on this or any other business. So, Madam Chair, well, we are in opposition to, just want to go on the record to say we oppose Senate Bill 482. Thank you.
Okay. Questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Riley.
Thank you. Scott, I just wanted, since you think this is not the right time to do this, when do you think is the right time to do this?
Well, I think, Madam Chair, Senator Riley, I hate to keep pointing back to legislation. I just know that the committee has heard us testify on kind of these larger macro issues quite a few times, so I can be very brief here. We are already experiencing significant tax increases, and so I think as we've tried to testify before, right now is not the time to talk about any tax increases, this or any other, not to mention the fact that we're still in a COVID economy and we're still, trying to deal with, trying to understand how that will play itself out, and what the economy, we're still in a difficult economy. And then the third thing, Senator, I would say is that, this is it goes back to a question that was asked, I think, by the chair, but this is an issue right now where it is a federal government. It's a federal government tax policy. If we are to effectively disconnect from that federal government tax policy, it creates one more layer of complexity and cost for these tax filers to be able to just file their tax returns and follow tax law compared to what they've been in the past. And it looks like this.
Well, but this isn't, as Chris reminded us, this really isn't a disconnection issue because Oregon already taxes capital gains at the capital gains rate. Correct, Chris?
Yes, Oregon does not have a special rate for capital gains in general. So it gets taxed the same as other income.
Okay, other questions from the committee? Thank you, Scott. Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 482, and we will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 108. We've heard the summary, and we now know that Christine Curran is ready to testify. So Christine, you're up.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chrissy Curran. I am the Deputy Director in charge of Heritage Programs for the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department and the Director of the State Historic Preservation Office. I'm going to briefly summarize today Senate Bill 108, but first I need to share with you a little bit about how the Special Assessment Program works. The Special Assessment Program is the state's only historic preservation incentive. It was established in 1975 by the 58th Legislative Assembly. The voluntary program allows owners of historic properties, both commercial and residential, to be specially assessed for 10 years in exchange for making historically appropriate improvements to their historic building. It is administered by the Oregon State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO, which resides within the Heritage Division of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Applicants pay a fee and file a preservation plan with the SHPO for proposed rehabilitation. Property taxes for participating properties rise annually 3% as prescribed by Measure 50, but owners do not get reassessed on their improvement work until the end of the 10-year term. Participants must commit to expending 10% of the property's real market value within the first 5 years of special assessment. Owners submit progress reports to the SHPO in the third, sixth, and ninth years of the term. The property is removed from special assessment at the end of the 10-year term and is reassessed at current values. Applicants can qualify for a second 10-year term if their plan includes significant investment in seismic upgrades, energy conservation, or universal access. Following the second 10-year term, the property can no longer qualify. The program has been reauthorized 5 times since 1975, the most recently in 2019, which set the sunset date for 2022. Senate Bill 108 makes several administrative adjustments, but I will focus today on the biggest changes proposed in the bill. Senate Bill 108 limits participation to owners of income-producing properties only. It eliminates the 10-year term. Instead, owners may use the program as often as they have qualified work to do. Terms remain 10 years long, and properties continue to get reassessed between terms. Improvements to seismic resiliency, energy conservation, and universal access are encouraged but not required. Senate Bill 108 requires properties be listed in the National Register of Historic Places at the time of application. Currently, they have 2 years from certification to get the property listed. And importantly, it extends the sunset date of the program to 2031. As you can see, I just have a short deck of slides that has been flipping through just to give you an example of the kind of work that is made possible by the Special Assessment Program. That concludes my summary, and I am here for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. We don't have anybody else signed up for this. Are you working with the counties and the cities on this? Are they on board with this?
We have reached out to several different kinds of stakeholders, the primary users and folks that are most affected by this program. So we have reached out to We've reached out to city planners, nonprofit partners, the Department of Revenue, who actually statutorily has a role in the administration of this program. We've reached out to the county assessors, both individually and at the organizational level. So we reached out to the Oregon State Association of County Assessors, the Association of Oregon Counties, of course, property owners, both residential and commercial, developers, consultants, contractors. So yes, we have started. We reached out when the bill was written, and we have heard a little bit of mostly the comments back to us have come from folks who are concerned about having the properties listed before they can apply for the certification for the special assessment. So that has been our primary feedback so far.
Okay, Senator Boquist has a question.
Yeah, hopefully you can hear me because I'm having problems here. Normally we extend, we put 6-year sunsets on these types of tax bills, and I'm looking through here and thinking that this has like a 10 or 12 year sunset on it. Is there some particular reason why we would, for parks, why you would need to have it for 10 years versus 6 years?
Senator Boquist, Chair Burdick, no, there is no specific reason. As I mentioned, the program has been reauthorized 5 times since 1975, and each time preceding the very last one in 2019, it had been reauthorized at 10 years. So we just went with that 10-year ask.
The last time it was reauthorized, it was for 10 years, or is it for 6 years?
Chair Burdick, the last time it was authorized, it was for 2 years. We actually asked for this very last time in 2019. The agency requested a short extension because we wanted to make changes to the program and we didn't want to perpetuate the program in exactly the same way. So we asked for a short extension to make the changes that are proposed and sent now coming before you in Senate Bill 108. But every other sunset was 10 years. Every other extension was 10 years.
Okay, but I hear what I imply from what I infer from what you're saying is that a 6-year sunset wouldn't be a problem. We try to keep consistent unless there are other factors. And what I'm hearing from you is that 6 years would not be a problem.
Chair Burdick, that is correct.
Okay, Senator Boquist.
Just as a follow-up, Madam Chair, and Senator Riley was there too. I have recollection of this, and I think this discussion of the 6-year rotation that we were done came up in the last time around, and because it was only done for the couple of years, it wasn't put back in at that time. But I think the whole purpose of the 6-year rotation is for us to figure out things that should not be in the future. And I would say that's been a policy we've had at least for almost more than 6 years now. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Senator Riley.
So, Madam Chair, does this have a refer to the Tax Expenditure Committee?
Not right now. This is a property tax issue, and we don't always take those at the Joint Tax Expenditure Committee.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Boquist, your hand is still up. Do you still have a question?
Madam Chair, I have 3 screens now and half video, so no, I don't have a question and I can't turn it off.
Okay.
Chris is aware of this problem and we're trying to get...
Okay, my condolences if you can still hear me. Okay, I see no other hands up, so we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108. And Chris, I believe that completes our work for the day. Okay, thank you, committee, And tomorrow, remember tomorrow we have no meeting, and we will have a meeting on Wednesday. So with that, we are adjourned.